Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America, this is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back to Hour 2 of Old School, brought to you by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese. Austin Norman and Jay Foreman with you here. Jay, we're still talking about NIL, even during the season. Dan Lanning and Mike Gundy had some fun back and forth. I want to play you a clip from Dan Lanning, his weekly coaches show. He's taking some questions. And Dan Lanning on NIL and Mike Gundy's comments about it. Here is the Oregon head coach.
Yeah, it sounds like there is, listening to him talk. Like I said, I got a ton of respect for Coach Gundy. Ultimately, how blessed are we to be in a place that's invested in winning? If you want to be a top 10 team in college football, you better be invested in winning. And we spend to win. Some people save to have an excuse for why they don't, right? And ultimately, like, he's a great coach. They've done an unbelievable job. But I want to be a team that's competing at the highest level. And we're really fortunate to be in that situation. So I can't speak on their situation. I have no idea, you know, what they got in their pockets over there. I'm sure UT Martin maybe didn't have as much as them last week, and they play
between these programs.
That last part I thought was kind of funny. Don't think UT Martin has as much as them.
Yeah.
Last week they played. But I think the instructive part was some teams spend to win, others save to have an excuse for when they don't.
Yeah.
And now maybe that's easier for Dan Lanning to say at Oregon, or if Ryan Day had said it. Maybe James Franklin, or certainly Kalen DeBoer at this point. We'll get to Alabama in just a second. But that's kind of the motto, I guess, in college football. I think Dan Lanning summed it up really well. If you have money, use it because everyone else is. If you don't have money, find a way to get some money, because no one's going to want the excuse of, oh, we're poor. You know, people are going to tell you you can find money somewhere. Yeah. So either spend it and try to win, or I see where Dan Lanning's coming from. If you're saving your money, you're just creating an excuse for yourself and your fans.
Yeah, he's about 90% right there. You know, he can easily say that because you got Nike behind you, and Oregon's been way ahead of the curve of NIL and stuff like that. Because even when Kevin Thibodeau was there, the defensive end, he said one of the reasons that he didn't go to USC versus Oregon is Oregon essentially promised him a job within Nike, a real job. Mm-hmm. That's essentially, you know, paying him, you
yeah.
know, and then obviously he ended up being, you know, top five pick and doing really well. I would add on to that, if you're a school that's able to spend money and has the money and doesn't have to worry about the 20 and a half million or 22 the year after that, and 25, I think at the max, then you need to spend it. More importantly, I would say if you're a team that doesn't have the resources as Oregon or Texas Tech or something like that, the biggest thing, spend wisely.
Mm. Not how much you spend, but how you spend.
Spend it wisely. Don't spend it if they're not worth it. So the teams that don't have, because what he's saying, what he didn't say is Oregon, Texas Tech, they can go out there and miss. It's kind of like Big Bang, like Big Bang take Little Bang. When you play golf against Jordan, he going to double the bet. Until you can't handle it, either he's not going to owe you anything, or he's going to send you to the ATM or to the bank, or mm-hmm. have to write a big check. That's really, that's the part that he missed. It really, I think, And he doesn't have to worry about that because, you know, he's on the, he's at the top of majority of every kid's list that they get in contact with. They don't have to they do have to evaluate. They want their site certain type of player, you know, because he's building it Oregon like a SEC team and where he's, you know, came up. And but more importantly, they can afford to miss, and then they can jettison kids off, you know, as they see fit. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's just the benefit of where they're at and with their situation. Now, other people's situation is that you can't, if you don't have the finances of Oregon, you just can't be Oregon, but you can be your own version of Oregon and make sure that you evaluate, develop, spend within your realm, because you'll get more return on your investment there. In the problem where I think you run into overspend for average players, they continue to do average things, then they become a waste of money. You spend,
and then the next good players, legitimately good players you want to pay, say, look how much better I was than that guy. My price is even more.
And then you got to pay him. Then they end up going to somewhere else anyway. So you got to, it's a hard thing to do because you got to be competitive with your offers and what you're paying, because everybody talks. I mean, all these kids could just imagine you're at Oregon, or say you're at UCLA. And, you know, you Oregon wants you, and say, I guess in this case, Nebraska or somebody. You could just go to, and I'm sure all these kids know each other. Hey, you know, are they pretty, you know, lenient, or do they spend well at your school? Or, you know, Nebraska does. So it'd be, say, like a, I don't know, another, say Oklahoma State or somebody like that, or like a Kansas State, mm-hmm. you know. And so you got to make good decisions financially as far as where you go as a player, but then you got to make really good, prudent decisions as an evaluator, as a head coach, GM, or NIL person.
Do you think that Alabama is closer to the Oregon Texas Tech camp or to the they have to be frugal camp?
I think Alabama for another year or two will still be able to ride the, we were the most dominant team for the last 20 years for a little while.
I'm just talking about the financials.
No, that's what I'm saying. Okay. So financially, that gives them unforeseen money. Mm. You know what I'm saying? So you'll like right now, you could go get a player like a Jay Foreman, and if it is even Steven or within a certain amount of, like I say, like 5 or 10%, they might still go to Alabama based on what other people did before. But really, realistically, they don't have the type of money. By my, like, they still do well NIL wise, or, you know, donation wise, but it can't be that good, because a year or two before Nick Saban retired, him and Coach Oates were at a donor event saying we need more money to keep up with Georgia and Texas A&M, the year that Texas A&M got that big class. Mm-hmm. So they can't, they're not Texas Tech. They're really probably good, comfortable. I would probably say, or Nick Saban would probably say, we probably, if he was still there, we needed to be better. But I'm sure DeBoer is worried about other things right now than how much money can he go get guys in the future.
Well, DeBoer's probably worried about keeping money away from Alabama, because the more they bring in, the more they have to fire him. I'm mostly joking.
I mean, it's, look, when they brought in $75 million that time with Jimbo Fisher, mm-hmm. that was your payout, your buyout. Yeah. That was it. Mm-hmm.
That was all of it.
It was more than that. It was 100,
like 80, something like 80, that. Yeah.
Or it was maybe
his buyout was 80.
Yeah, but yeah, 80. But the check was like 125 or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was it. So, I mean, when you're in a coaching business, all jokes aside, you're this is why how you treat people is so important. In and out of the stadium, or any out of the offices, the media and their players, and all, it's so important. Chances are you're not going to win at the clip that you would like every year. So you're always going to have to, I wouldn't say call in favors, but you're going to have like some good graces. Mm-hmm. And so where you think about like DeBoer, he's taking a job. He understands the type of pressure. You know, Jerry Burns told me, look, you know, coach, us coaches, we get hired to get fired.
Yeah.
Philip Fulmer, 2 years after they go to the championship game, they're like, all right, you ain't winning enough.
And he was so mad he ran Greg Schiano out of town.
Oh, the student fan base did.
That was Fulmer.
Yeah. It was a Fulmer?
That was Fulmer.
Oh, it was okay. Well, a Fulmer. Well, because he's probably mad.
He was mad. He wanted in.
Yeah, but
he was behind the scenes of all that.
Yeah, he brought in Derek Dooley, so you suck. So
I think Derek Dooley's running for Senate in Georgia.
So he just says bump coaching.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And he coached like it too.
He did.
Hey, remember when Derek Dooley just took the headset off? Let's do it. Oh, shucks. Hey, he coached at the Cowboys too. So, you know, he did. Yeah. But I don't know. I just think that Alabama's in a weird situation right now. They have a top four roster.
Mm-hmm. And it's to that point. I want to jump off on that. Yeah. AJ McCarron went on an SEC podcast and said, you look at these other teams that have $40 to $50 million in NIL, Alabama, and I know this for a fact, talking to multiple people in the program, Alabama has less than $20 million in NIL. Now, Alabama, almost all but assuredly, is hitting the $20.5 million of rev share.
That was just for the football team he was talking about, right?
I assume no, so.
AJ McCarron.
Yes.
Well, he's probably thinking like Texas Tech. Georgia ain't paying that much.
No.
I think
Oregon's probably mid to upper 20s,
yeah.
If I had to guess. But
Ohio State was 20 last year. Right. Nobody's doubling that.
No, not in 1 year.
No.
Not like that.
Texas Tech is the outlier, and it'll be interesting to see how well they're evaluating players down there.
TBD. Jury's still definitely.
Yeah. They haven't been hit yet. I do understand with AJ McCarron. He's actually pretty funny.
But I also think it's believable.
It is
in terms of NIL. You know, rev share they're hitting.
Yeah,
but the NIL separate from it.
There's probably a lot, not a lot, but a higher number that he likes than he likes of universities or NIL like companies or whatever associated with certain universities that are doing a lot more on a bigger scale in Alabama.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply. Mm-hmm.
Some of it is where they're located. Okay. In Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
Some of it is
where other schools are located.
Other
in major
schools
media
are located,
hubs.
But then also the lack of continuity between the collectives and NILs in the athletic department. You got to think, when it first started, Alabama didn't need it as long as they were able to kind of essentially pay players.
Mm-hmm.
NIL wasn't a big thing. They were like, you're coming here. We're going to pay you respectable amount. We're going to train you to get ready for the NFL because we've probably had $1 billion of contracts over the last however many, 10 years, right? Well, now, because you remember, I think, when the NIL first started, like the collectives really started, you know, being out in front, I think it was like a year ago, the guy that headed the Alabama collective, when it first started you started to hear about rev share, he was talking about how hard it was to work with the athletic department
mm-hmm.
because they were reluctant to use him.
Yeah.
Well, that lets you know that is gone. So that was the biggest guy there. And I think he might, you know, kind of rubbed some people the wrong way. He wanted to kind of just skirt the rules, whatever it would be. So they're behind there on top of, they don't have the ace in the hole in Nick Saban.
Right.
So they're in a tricky situation because
they're rich, but not maybe top of the sport rich. Like you could have banked on, plus the Nick Saban effect that can make up that difference.
And that's the product on the field, the blue chip Alabama presence, Nick Saban, the guys that get drafted and where they get drafted, that, you know, they're star players in college and all that. Cause you got to think that, you know, you had Tua, Jalen Hurts, you know, Derrick, all these guys are either Heisman winners or, you know, top picks. You don't really have that now. And in particular, you're not playing well. So you lose your ace in the hole. The ultimate equalizer is now on ESPN doing college games, or, you know, studio analysts, or, you know, so they are in a position now to where Nebraska was many, many years ago.
2003-ish?
Yeah, whenever it started to really dip down. Yeah, exactly. 2003-ish. It's, was it the coach at Notre Dame after, was it Willingham? Then they went to Davey, right? Notre Dame was, they put the plug in the hole real quick, and they kept going. Or like a Michigan for the short, you know, period. Tennessee went through it, not as long, maybe, you know what I'm saying? Now they never had to switch conferences. That's the difference, right? Where that's the difference for Nebraska versus everybody else. I think,
well, Josh Heupel doesn't strike me as a national championship type head coach,
right? But switching conferences for Nebraska at that point in time of college football and the whole landscape made it, and then obviously, you know, being able to win 9 games, and then again, you get to the Big Ten championship, and then so when you get kind of exposed, it kind of really brings you down, because now you're comparing to the ultimate height and at your lowest, and there's different factors in there. And so Alabama's in a tricky situation because everybody's focusing on Nick Saban's reign. You should. It's been, what, 17 years or whatever. He's 7 national titles or whatever, or 6 or whatever he has. Before he got there, you're talking about Mike Shula, Price that didn't even get to his first practice, and all them guys.
DuBose.
It was horrible.
At Alabama.
Alabama. And remember when he left the Dolphins to go there, they were like, they were saying it might take him 2 or 3 years just to get things in order. Where after the first year, then he got the second year, they got on that. And then obviously, you know, rest is history. But pre-Saban, you got to think for Alabama's history, you know, you got to think you had obviously Bear Bryant, then Gene Stallings, and then a big gap there. But the problem, but the good thing for them is when that big gap was there, there wasn't this much media attention.
No.
All you had is an article in Tuscaloosa. Nobody cared.
Speaking of studio analysts and small town, nobody cares. Dan Hurley contemplated stepping away from UConn basketball, taking a gap year to be a Fox Sports college basketball analyst. Can you imagine the shockwaves that would have sent through the sport this offseason? Not only did he have the dalliance with the Lakers last offseason, then Kentucky a couple of years ago as well, but a back-to-back national champion, earned an 8 seed this year, still a good year. But Jay, can you imagine the reaction out of stores if after last season, Dan Hurley says, nah, I'm good. I got to step away because I'm burnt out. That would have been like the Urban Meyer of college basketball.
Yeah, that would be horrible. I get it being burnt out, and maybe that's just something that he needs to, you know, get within himself, because you got another big season coming on right now.
They'll be better this year. They're scary.
Yeah, they'll be better, but his intensity isn't going to go anywhere. I mean, even when they did that, like, I think that ESPN, you know, story on him or whatever, he's like, burnout around here is real because I demand so much.
Yeah.
Well, you just told on yourself. So I don't know. I don't think he would ever been able to go back.
Not to UConn.
And maybe, but do you have regrets of going back to UConn? Is that why you said it? Because you felt like you had to burn yourself out to win those back-to-backs, and you didn't get it, so it's not. Then you feel like it's not worth it. Why would you?
It sounded like, because that was an excerpt from his upcoming book that he helped write, and it sounded like, I mean, obviously we know that he's intense, right? He's got his style, right? And that's certainly on the table. But it sounded like it was the back-to-back summers of media obligations on top of the constant recruiting, on top of the NIL and transfer portal. That some of that, you know, that's what the money's for,
yeah,
right? The new day and age of college athletics. And sure, maybe we could do better by our our coaches and not burn them out, right? Make a more logical recruiting calendar. But also, dude, you won two national championships. Of course, everyone's going to want a piece of you, especially in Storrs, Connecticut, where they're kind of used to this whole winning basketball championships thing on both the men's and the women's side. So yeah, like I get it. I'm not in his shoes, but I kind of understand his plight. But also, dude, it comes with the territory.
Yeah, you're getting $10 million a year in Connecticut. More importantly, I'm not really trying to hear your excuse about recruiting.
Right.
Because you're not recruiting anybody that you don't want. Your list of players every year is very small. You're not having to go.
Yeah, 10 guys.
But you're not. He's not having to go to EYBL Peach Jam or the Adidas, you know, tournament in like say like North Carolina or New York or something, and try to find your Ja Morant back in the auxiliary gym.
Right.
You don't have to do that. The guys that you are wanting are live on stage, like in those
main gym seeking you out as well.
Or the portal guys, you've already had your, you know, lines in the water, and you're recruiting the best of the best in the portal.
Mm-hmm.
So you ain't recruiting. Now your practices and stuff and the media obligations.
That's normal. Part of the deal.
Yeah. That lets me think like, you know what? He's probably been thinking. Winning two was good enough. Lost a lot of players. Lost a lot of games in his by his standards this year. It was a lot harder.
0-3 in Maui did not sit well.
He took a lot of heat for his antics.
Mm-hmm.
Remember he got somebody did the, you know, lip reading. Is like, how are you going to call that? I'm the best coach. All that stuff. I think that wore on him big time. I think that manifested over time.
And it's understandable to a degree.
Yeah.
But come on, Dan, chill.
Yeah. You're not getting much empathy over here.
No, nor should you. Let's go to break. Evan Blaine of the Omaha World Herald's our guest on the other side.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're rolling right along here on old school. I'm Austin Norman. We're headed to our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber is where they understand the importance of exceptional service with local heart. Big shout out to our friends at Aloe, the official internet provider of the Huskers as well. We are joined on that VIP line by Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald, who did indeed make it back from Kansas City through the concrete jungle and the mess of cars and all. Evan, was the trip as brutal for you and the World Herald crew as it seemed like it was for everyone else?
Yeah, we were part of that crowd heading down and back, to be honest. I mean, going down was a little more congested for sure, but it's amazing what happens when like a 50-foot stretch of bridge is closed to one lane and how far back some of the traffic went. But, you know, it was just a constant reminder of the passion of Nebraska fans and what they thought about that game and everything that went into it. So hindsight, it might have left a little earlier, taken a different path, but you know, it's you know, again, just a reminder of what a big deal a lot of people saw that game to be, and ultimately probably that traffic would have irked a few more folks if the result had been different.
Result is a 20-17 Nebraska win, of course. And let me just ask this, Evan, just kind of broad spectrum, big picture here. Did Nebraska look in week one the way you expected them to? Did the Huskers meet your expectations? Did it look like same old Nebraska, or like this was a program that took another step in the right direction over the offseason?
Well, I thought there were elements that were sort of what we expected. I mean, we went into this season for weeks and months talking about the defensive line and how that could look, and they struggled with stopping the run at times, especially with the mobile quarterback on the other side. And you heard from Matt Rhule and coaches this week saying maybe some of the pursuit angles weren't the best. The effort was good, but maybe the speed could have been better. I think that's probably one area where there was a sense of what that might be. You know, I think offensively, the thing we kept hearing from Dana Holgorsen was routine play, and that bore out at Arrowhead too, where you have Dylan Raiola completing 78% of his passes, no turnovers, but not a lot of deep chances downfield either. So a lot of that I think we saw coming and have talked about for a while. You'd like some more explosive plays. You'd like a little bit of running back depth. It's pretty clear that Emmett Johnson's the guy, and you'd love to keep him healthy all season. 35 touches a game is probably not going to be sustainable over the course of a full season, but you have that. And I think a lot of the other things maybe that people wrung their hands about are things that Nebraska will iron out in the next couple of weeks. When you're talking about finding a left tackle or, receiver production, especially talking about longer plays, I think those things will start to come as things move along. But yeah, it's kind of a mix. Things that Nebraska kind of probably knew in advance, and then some things that pop up during the game that now they're going to have this week to correct, and quite honestly, a couple more weeks to correct before they get into Big Ten play.
That was going to be the next sort of question. How long do you give Nebraska to figure out who its starting left tackle is going to be consistently, who the backup running backs are going to be, and if there are more explosive plays in this team? Do you give them through the non-conference? Do you give them till the first bye week? When would be your point of concern for, hey, Nebraska's still got these questions, they might be moving from questions into concerns?
Yeah, I think the non-con would be probably the cleanest way to do it. I mean, you've heard kind of the comparison before of non-conference games to kind of like the NFL preseason a little bit, where, you know, at the professional level, you have three or four chances to iron things out and see what you have and how do guys respond and who's on the back end of your 53-man roster, kind of your two deep. And Nebraska's working through a lot of that. I mean, they practiced for more than a month. They had a long off season, but they needed to see how guys responded in games. I think this next 2 weeks, really one of the themes is going to be about the depth. So who gets going behind Emmett Johnson? In all likelihood, you're not going to need him to carry a heavy workload. So what can Quentin Ives do, or Isaiah Mosey, or Mekhi Nelson? Like, what does that next level look like? How do you replace Janarin Bonner and the blocking presence and physical ability that he brought? Like, is that Carter Nelson? Is that Heinrich Harburg? Is that something else? So like, that's something that they're going to have to figure out. You're going to have to look at, you're probably going to want to see some explosive plays from your receivers. You're going to want to see your defensive line stop the run and get after the quarterback. And so I think those are things expect to see against an Akron team that you're favored by 34.5 points against, and probably something pretty similar against Houston Christian. And then you turn into the Big Ten, where you're going to be playing a lot of close games against teams that have just as much financial backing to their roster as Nebraska does. And it becomes about the margins and making a play here or there. And so we saw that against Cincinnati. I think that's probably the most encouraging part, is that in a lot of ways, Nebraska is the same team that it was last year, but it's finding ways to win a game late. I mean, it made a play down the stretch that won them the game instead of lost it for them. So I think these next couple of weeks just are about finding a rhythm, finding who can you trust, who do you think can make plays, and then the guys that do in those games get a chance against Michigan, and then it's really all hands on deck to see how that thing plays out, because that Michigan game is absolutely a chance to change the perception of where the program's headed nationally. It's a chance to get off on the right foot in league play, and obviously you have a bye after that, and you can still figure things out, of course. But I think the most pressing stuff you have to iron out here in the next 2 weeks on the way to victories, and then you've got to be ready to go and know what you want to do against Michigan.
We're talking with Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald on our LO Fiber VIP line. I really liked what John Butler had to say about the next play mentality, especially for a guy like Malcolm Hartsock, who really got tested throughout the game against Cincinnati. Been an up and down tenure at Nebraska for him. Some of it due to, you know, his issues, some of it due to going back and forth between positions. But I thought it was a nice moment of self-reflection from John Butler, who even said, you know, sometimes he gets caught up in, you know, not necessarily abiding by that next play mentality. Man, I should have called that. What if I was more aggressive here? I really like John Butler's answer about Malcolm Hartzog, his persistence, and how, you know, even a lesson from a player can stick with a coach like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can bet that that was among the first things that the coaches showed the team this week. And I mean, you just think about that drive at the end there. Cincinnati's going down the field and they have a 4th and 7 near midfield. And it was the completion to Hartzog's guy that kept it going. And then he had the defensive hold and he shook it off and made a great play right at the end to seal that thing. One-handed play, kind of baited the throw from Brandon Sorsby a little bit and went out and did it. And what a testament to everything you're talking about, where maybe a play doesn't go your way. You don't let that one play turn into 2 or 3 or 4 that beat you. And so, yeah, I mean, I also appreciated John Butler's answer to that. I think sometimes it's easy for fans and media folks to just kind of think that coaches are robots and kind of get, you know, into their own rhythm. But I appreciated hearing that sometimes that affects him too and other coaches, and that can be a reminder for them as well. And again, like, I'll just say, like, this is a schedule. It's on paper easier than a schedule Nebraska's played in recent years, but like, you can expect a bunch of games to come down to the wire, similar to what we just saw with Cincinnati. I mean, the Big Ten's deep, it's resourced. Every week you're going to see games that are decided by a turnover here, a field goal there, a missed tackle, or whatever it might be. And so, yes, you want to be the team that makes those plays, but part of that is exactly what we're talking about, where you can't let one gut punch snowball into 2 or 3. You have to shake it off, move on to that next play. And you know, maybe that's one of the values of culture that we talk about in the offseason. And if that can be part of your culture, part of your team DNA, where that next play, you forget about the last one, you move right on to the next. I mean, that's, again, that's the kind of thing that can flip multiple games and really lead to the kind of season Nebraska's been looking for.
The other interesting thing I thought that John Butler said at the top of my list from his Tuesday presser was about Riley Van Poppel. Of course, he was asked about him, so it's not like John Butler brought this up out of the blue, but the first thing he said was, you know, we got to make sure that, you know, Riley is playing as hard as he thinks that he's playing. And then, of course, you go on to add the caveat, well, that goes for all of our guys. We still don't really know as much about how John Butler communicates in the media as Matt Rhule does. That came from Matt Rhule. I would almost wonder if that was a challenge to a guy who's clearly viewed as a leader in the team, right? Single digit guy, despite the red shirt last year, not a lot of experience. Clearly the team views him as a leader enough to give him that single digit. If it was from Matt Rhule, I think it was a challenge. Did you sense that John Butler was challenging Riley Van Poppel to step up as a leader? Or is that more of a calling out from John Butler, like, hey, dude, pick it up. Our defensive line clearly needs you.
Yeah, you know, I from what we know about Butler from really his time at Nebraska, he's hesitant to talk about any player specifically. And we saw that again with the Riley Van Poppel answer, where he wanted to make it more general. But I mean, you just look at the snap counts and the amount of time that he was on the field, I would say it was a little bit less than what you would have expected from a guy who's a single digit and somebody who's been in the program for a couple of years, and just the state of the offensive line or the defensive line in general. Like, you would think that maybe that workload would be a little bigger. I guess I just kind of go back to what Matt Rhule and Butler have said, which was the defense played with a lot of effort, but it needs to play maybe with a little bit more speed. And specific to that defensive line, I mean, I thought what Butler said resonates with a lot of fans, where you say, yeah, we just want linemen that go, react, diagnose it quickly. Is it a runner? Is it a pass? And get after it. Like, it's not a thinking man's position. It's not a spot where you want to be tentative, like, be convicted in what you're going to do. And so it's certainly not saying that Van Poppel's not talented or he's not a leader or whatever, but I think sometimes, especially after that first game, you have guys that care so much about doing it right that it almost slows them down a little bit because they don't want to make a mistake. And so I think that's what Butler's saying. That's what Matt Rhule has said, is like, trust what you've done in the offseason, trust your preparation, and then just go out there and let your physical abilities take over. And so you talk about improvement from week one to week two. I think that's one spot I'll absolutely be watching here against Akron and beyond. It's going to be, can that defensive line move a little faster? Can it gum up the running lanes? Can it get after the quarterback maybe in ways that we haven't seen? And I think some of that does come down to what Cincinnati did. Nebraska's not going to see a lot of mobile quarterbacks like that. But I think if you can see a little bit more conviction, a little bit more explosiveness off that line, you're going to see Van Poppel out there probably more than we did last Thursday.
Nebraska Akron 6:30 on Saturday, covering it all for the Omaha World Herald. It is Evan Bland, our guest on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Evan, as always, appreciate your time on a Wednesday afternoon. We will see you on the sixth floor on Saturday.
Sounds good. Thanks, Austin.
Once again, Evan Blaine joining us on our Aloe Fiber VIP line. Aloe Fiber takes great care of us here at the station. I'm an Aloe subscriber. They do a fantastic job for me and my family. Oh, and by the way, they are the official internet provider of the Huskers as well. Good enough for them, ought to be good enough for you. Cannot more highly recommend the great people and the great service from Aloe. We'll go to break, bring Jay Foreman back in to wrap up Hour 2 of Old School.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
We're back wrapping up Hour 2 of Old School. Austin Orman, Jay Foreman with you. Thanks again to Evan Bland of the Omaha World Herald for some of his time. This segment of the show brought to you, as always, by Love Volleyball Nebraska. Just recently rebranded from Love Volleyball Omaha, you can renew your season tickets or secure yours for the first time by visiting lovb.com. That makes sure that you get your chance to watch Olympians, national team players, and former Huskers all take the court for Love Volleyball Nebraska. We talked a little bit of college basketball. It's the first day of the fall recruiting period. Nebraska's coaches, a handful of them at least, ended up at Waukee Northwest to check in on 2026 recruit Colin Rice, top 100 guy already committed to the Huskers. But Jay, this popped, I would say, last night and or this morning.
Yep.
Of course, the recruiting period starts at midnight. As soon as it's September 3rd, the period is open. Well, last night at midnight, both Mark Pope and Pat Kelsey showed up at the house of top 15 overall recruit Tay Kinney. You got recruited. What would you do if Coach showed up at your house at midnight for an in-home visit?
Oh, in-home visit?
Yeah, in-home visit. They are at this dude's front door, and their picture's in Tay Kinney's living room.
Oh, no, we got to get on the game. What are we talking about at midnight?
What's up?
Yeah,
just checking
in. Yeah, we're getting in.
We still cool?
Yeah. How long can they be at your house for?
Ooh, that I don't know. But the fact that both of them, I mean, both.
They had to know. Yeah. They had to inform him about that, right?
Oh, they had to.
Yeah.
Does it mean something if you take one first, take one second? Like, what if you're with Mark Pope for an hour? Does he feel any obligation to leave? Is he trying to stick around?
He's probably trying to stick around. He's trying to wear the other dude out. Supposed to be out of there at one. You don't leave. Oh man, I lost track of time.
Oh, sorry. Sorry, yeah, Pat.
Sorry about that.
But not really.
Yeah. I'm gonna head on back to the hotel, man.
See you there.
Yeah, he seems a little tired, but he's waiting for you. Yeah. Yeah, that's tough right there.
I just can't imagine wanting a player so desperately as a coach to show up at his house at midnight. Top 15 in the class.
Yeah, that could be
Regardless, I mean, I don't know if I would have shown up at Cooper Flagg's house at midnight.
Yeah, I don't think it'd sway him. You know, I mean, Kentucky, you don't even have to do this.
No.
But Mark Pope is trying to do it differently. But, you know, I think I wouldn't have done it.
Unless he has to do it.
Yeah.
If everyone else is doing it and he feels like he has to. But see, the normal thing to do is what Nebraska did. Go to the kid's high school the next day.
Yeah.
Not that hard. But you have to show up at his house at midnight?
Yeah.
That's too far for me.
I wouldn't have done that. And definitely would have tried to get him at his high school and get him after, you know, because really that first day, he's probably going to get a ton of texts and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be the one that sticks in his mind, you know, later the next day or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you would guess that since both Mark Pope and Pat Kelsey showed up, that Tay Kinney would be a player out of the state of Kentucky, would you not?
You would like to think so.
He's in Atlanta. He's an overtime elite. That Atlanta's a far trip necessarily from Kentucky.
They don't go to school.
They didn't go to school, play school. Correct.
Yeah, so
But I'm just saying, you can still show up to Overtime Elite the next day and accomplish the exact same thing.
Yeah.
It's not like he's just down the block. He just happened to pop in.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done that. You better commit.
Number one overall player in Georgia, number one point guard, now number 12 nationally in the 24-7
sports. You're going to end up like your boy Dan Lanning, jumping that pool with that dude, and that dude decommitted like 2 weeks later.
Harbaugh also did some weird stuff in Michigan. Wasn't he the one that's like climbing the tree?
Yeah, that's him, though.
Like, come on. At some point, if you're a recruit, okay, yeah, this guy clearly wants me to play for him, but that's crossed the line. This is too far. Like, at this point, it's just weird.
Is your parents up that late?
If it's an in-home visit, I would at least have mom or dad up, unless, again, he's in Atlanta playing for Overtime Elite. Are mom and dad even there?
Yeah, that wouldn't fly in my house.
What would Chuck Foreman have done if a coach showed up at your house?
I mean, if he knew, my dad would be up. But he wouldn't get the best version of Chuck. That wouldn't have worked out well. It wouldn't have worked. Oh, my God. That just wouldn't have worked. It just wouldn't have been. That would not have been a good scene. That would have been a wasted trip.
So good thing they didn't do it then.
Yeah.
We'll go to break. We'll have hour 3 of Old School on the other side.